from WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Happy, happy Tuesday. It is July 14th, 2015, and you are tuned into Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We have a great show in store for you. It's a rainy one out there. We're going to try to keep you all warm and fuzzy with the show today, as we will have a really unbelievable player when he was with the Lansing Lugnuts. His name is Chase DeYoung, former Lansing Lugnuts pitcher, now with the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes. He'll be calling in around the 1:30 mark to talk about his time when he was a Lansing Lugnut here in the area. Also, you'll get to hear his thoughts on last night's home run derby. Just the overall schedule of a minor league baseball player, the grind that is minor league baseball, all of that and so much more. So you do not want to miss our chat with Chase DeYoung. We'll also continue our chat from yesterday's show, the Detroit Tigers and their midseason grades. Don't miss that chat. Also, Michigan football, folks. Tickets are quickly going, and we'll discuss the hoopla that is Jim Harbaugh and the reason why there are only a few tickets left for the regular season. You don't want to miss that, Chad. We'll also be talking about Tiger Woods as he scoffs at retirement and the Pistons with a new acquisition in their backcourt. Don't miss any of that talk, folks. Again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this July 14th. Ole Miss Athletics is excited to announce the 2015 OHS Athletic Hall of Fame induction class. Now, this inaugural class was selected by the OHS Athletic Hall of Fame Committee and represents various eras and contributions to the history of Ole Miss High School athletics. Now, the inaugural OHS Athletic Hall of Fame induction ceremony will take place on Thursday, October 1st of this year, as a part of OHS Homecoming Week. Inductees will also be recognized at the homecoming football game at OHS on Friday, October 2nd. Now, tickets for the induction ceremony will go on sale on August 10th through the Ole Miss Athletic Office. We'll give you details on who those inductees are just a sec here on the show. According to Michigan, only scattered single seats remain for home games against Oregon State, Northwestern, and Rutgers. Now, those limited opportunities do not include rivalry games against Michigan State and Ohio State, which were both announced as sellouts last week. Now, according to a Michigan spokesman, those remain the program's lone sellouts as of Monday. General public single game tickets are currently available for purchase. Oregon State, September 12th, starting at $80. UNLV, starting at $55. BYU, starting at $80. Northwestern, starting at $75. And Rutgers, starting at $65. With Brandon Jennings still recuperating from a ruptured left Achilles and an uneven summer league performance from Spencer Dinwiddie, the Detroit Pistons went searching for some insurance behind starting point guard Reggie Jackson. Now, and they hope they have found it in veteran Steve Blake. Now, the Detroit Pistons acquired Blake from the Brooklyn Nets for forward Quincy Miller. The team announced that on Monday evening. Todd Frazier, Cincinnati's hometown all-star, gave the fans exactly what they wanted Monday night at the MLB Home Run Derby, winning the entire enchilada. Now, Frazier, with his brother Charlie pitching to him, hit a barrage of homers in the final 90 seconds of the Derby Finals to beat the LA Dodgers rookie Jock Peterson and take home the title that eluded him in 2014. Now, the Tide Father, as they call him out in Cincinnati, is now the Home Run Derby King of the MLB. On Monday night, the United States men's national soccer team battled against Panama, tying 1-1 despite a largely ineffective performance. Now, in a game that really meant nothing in terms of the final result, to a U.S. side that already locked up a spot in the quarterfinals and everything to a Panama team trying to find its way through the lockout phase of the Gold Cup, the U.S. still managed to do just enough to avoid the loss. As the NFL deadline approaches for franchise players to sign multi-year contracts, wide receiver Dez Bryant has attempted to increase the pressure on the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys receiver tweeted on Monday that he won't report to the team unless he has a long-term deal. How about that? Now, the tweet comes on the heels of a phone call he recently made to the team to communicate the same message, according to league sources, and it was released about an hour ago at the NFL Players Association may charge the Dallas Cowboys and the Broncos with collusion if Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas do not sign long-term deals. Former Florida State quarterback DeAndre Johnson apologized for his actions in a confrontation with a woman last month that ultimately resulted in misdemeanor battery charges against the freshman and his dismissal from the Seminoles football team. Sitting with his mother, Pamela Jones, in an interview that aired this morning on ABC's Good Morning America, Johnson said that he wished he walked away from the entire situation. Johnson said, quote, "It kills him inside to know that he hurt his mother, who said he didn't raise him like that." Now, Jones said she cried for 3 days in light of the news. And last but not least, expect to see Tiger Woods playing golf for a long while. He said, quote, "Retirement, I don't have any AARP card yet, so I'm always a ways from that." He said that this morning, actually, at the Old Course home to the 144th British Open that begins this Thursday. He says, quote, "I'm still young. I'm not 40 yet. I know some of you guys may think I'm buried and done, but I'm still right here in front of you." His pre-tournament meeting with the media was this morning. Again, folks, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in right now and give your thoughts on any of those, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. What is up, beautiful people? You are tuned into Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Glad to have you listening on this fantastic Tuesday. What you just heard, of course, was Todd Frazier in last night's home run derby winning the entire thing. Was that exciting or what? I watched the entire home run derby, and I got to tell you, folks, I really enjoyed the modified format this year. Of course, they actually riddled down the time from 5 minutes per player to 4 minutes because of the severe thunderstorm threat that was, throughout the evening in Cincinnati, Ohio. But, wow, it was fun to watch. With 4 minutes left with each respective player, each player got a chance to go up at bat and give their hand and their try at, to see who could knock the most home runs out the park. And, it got really interesting. The reason why I like the time format is because as time whittled down in each respective round, which was kind of like an NCAA, tournament feel, March Madness type of a feel, because each player, went against, another player. And whoever, knocked the most home runs between those two would advance to the next round to face the winner of the second round. So, and then the third round and so on and so forth. And it was so interesting to watch as the time whittled down, and if it was a close race between two players, you started to see each player get into desperation mode and just, start to just, hammer home home runs, or at least try to, with big swings. And it was fun to watch because it came down to the wire multiple times with about, 30 seconds left. And then they had bonus times based on what you did throughout that round. And I really enjoyed it because, it really brought a feel to baseball, because baseball isn't a time sport. There is no time limit on baseball. There is no shot clock or anything of that nature. But bringing this to the home run derby, you really started to, have a feel, that other sports like, football, basketball, and so on and so forth, that they have, dealing with that clock, because you're not only battling against yourself or your opponent, but you're also battling, against the clock as well. I really enjoyed it. And watching Todd Frazier, when he came down to it, I mean, he had 30 seconds at the end with that bonus time to just knock out the park, one home run to win the whole thing. And it was just fun to watch. You just heard on the mic, that was Chris Berman just absolutely losing his mind on the mic in Cincinnati last night. But it was really fun to sit back and watch it. And I have to agree with our engineer here on WKR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance, when he said yesterday that this is the best pre-event in any All-Star weekend or any All-Star week for that matter. I really enjoyed it, Isaac.
Oh, it was great. And it was great seeing the hometown boy win too. It really added something to it. You could see with every shot, the crowd would just go insane. It was great. I like the new format as well. And more than anything, I'm just happy it didn't get canceled.
Exactly. That's the main thing. Because, while I was watching it, I'm sitting there and you start to hear the analysts in the pregame guys on the mic, talk about how there is a threat of rain throughout the evening. And I really thought, even reading, the pre-reports, at 1 o'clock yesterday when we were on the show, I'm sitting there, watching it, and there were a lot of reports out there and a lot of experts out there that thought that it was going to get rained out for the first time since like 1988. And, I was just kind of crossing my fingers. I guess that rain dance I did after we got off the air yesterday really worked, I guess.
Guess so, Al. Yeah. Thankfully too, it was a great event as it always is. And can't wait for the next one too. And I'm excited for the actual All-Star game as well. See a few Tigers playing it, because we've talked about this. The Tigers have all the individual pieces. They really do, aside from in the bullpen. But yeah. Really, hitting-wise and starting pitching-wise, they've got all the individual pieces. So I'll be excited to see how they perform against baseball's best.
Yeah, certainly. And I'm really excited to see guys like, Jose Iglesias take the field tonight. It's going to be a very intriguing night when watching just the best of the best in baseball go at it on the field. So a great night. Actually, I want to continue our conversation, like we said on the heels of yesterday's show, when concerning the Detroit Tigers. Yesterday we attempted to give our season, mid-season grades, I should say, now that the first half of the season has officially done and finalized now. And we engage in our discussion on how we both think that the Detroit Tigers, as of right now, in the way that they are playing, it's going to be really tough for them to make the playoffs. Can they do it? Certainly. It's only the midway, of the season right now. Could they turn it up in the second half and make a run? Yeah, they could. But again, I stated yesterday's show that there is nothing that gives any Detroit Tigers fan out there hope that they can harp on and look to and say, okay, everything else may be going awry, but this is why, this particular component right here is the reason why the Tigers can turn this thing around. Right now, the Tigers aren't playing great baseball. You mentioned the bullpen, which has been a problem now for 4, 5, 6, 7, who knows how long the bullpen has been a problem now. I feel like every single year that we talk about the Detroit Tigers, we harp on that bullpen and how they just cannot close out games. That's an old problem that's existed for a while now. The batting for the Tigers is great, but it's inconsistent. That's the thing right now. If you look statistically, and I was looking up the stats on MLB.com, the Detroit Tigers are actually the number one batting team in the league. Point blank, period. They're just above, actually, the Kansas City Royals. Colorado Rockies are 3. San Francisco Giants are 4. And the Toronto Blue Jays are 5. So the Detroit Tigers lead everyone in the league when it comes to their production at bats. No surprise there. They got big bats everywhere. But I tell you what, this past stretch has hurt them because they are without their biggest bat in Miguel Cabrera, who, I think he has about, 3 more weeks until he's slated to come back with the Detroit Tigers. So that's no surprise there. But it doesn't matter how many runs you put up. If your pitchers can't come in and temper the other side of the game and make sure that their opponent isn't scoring and keeping up with you, you can't win games. you can't win games, point blank, period. The starting pitching has not been great by any means. And, you know, if anything, the fielding for the Tigers has also been, it's been solid, but also not where it needs to be. So if I had to give an overall grade for the Tigers right now throughout the season, hitting this halfway mark, Isaac, I would have to go like C minus D.
I'd go D plus. I would go D plus because, like you said, the other problem is there's a lot of things that are working. They're the best batting team in the MLB. Like you said, you've got J.D. Martinez, who is playing out of his head since June. June was great. July, he's continued for the most part. Maybe a slight drop off, but that's no shot against him because he's still playing fantastic. Jose Iglesias, of course, batting well over 300. Mickey, well over 300. Then you've got Yoenis Cespedes and Ian Kinsler, who have been consistent. It's no surprise the Tigers are batting so well, but it really falls on that pitching. And sometimes, also, the Tigers just weren't able to string runs together. We talked about their great opening to the season, but then after that, they were winning a lot of games 3-2. 2-1, and then they would lose some of those games as well. And you're like, well, how come they can't score more runs if everybody's batting 300? So there's that factor too, just ill-timed batting and ill-timed pitching. And gosh, but really, it's just the pitching. And you can't see it getting too much better, in my opinion. David Price is having one of his best seasons as a pro. And then Justin Verlander even picking up right now, but everybody else has dropped off.
Right, I agree. And you talk about that pitching right now. The Detroit Tigers, they rank 27th in the league when it comes to their pitching. So that can't win you games. That right there is a problem that has to turn around very, very soon here. And you know, Dave Dombrowski is a guy who I think he knows what the problem is. But Dave Dombrowski, I just don't get why he hasn't made the necessary moves to improve this team when it comes to especially that bullpen, which has been a glaring problem for a while now. And I brought up, you know, yesterday about Brad Ausmus as well. I think both of these individuals, especially if the Tigers do not make the playoffs this year, I think both of those individuals have to be placed on the hot seat. You have to put the spotlight on those two individuals because, to me, I think that Dave Dombrowski has just hasn't made the right moves. When you look at Brad Ausmus, it seems as though Brad Ausmus at times during press conferences especially, when you see his demeanor after the Tigers lose a game, he just kind of looks confused. I don't know if anyone else feels that way, but when I see Dave Dombrowski approach the podium and address the media after the Tigers have a bad outing or lose, he just looks confused. Like he doesn't have a handle on the steering wheel right now. And anytime you get that vibe from a manager and anytime you have the personnel that you have, because if you look at the Tigers on paper, you would think, okay, this is a team that could certainly compete for a World Series. But anytime you have a squad like that doesn't, you got to point fingers somewhere. And I think those fingers have to glaringly be pointed at, of course, Brad Ausmus and Dave Dombrowski.
I'd agree, Al, but another issue I see is that there's really a lack of youth talent on this team. There's not somebody you can point to like, well, in the future, he's going to take over for Miggy or whoever. Because guess what? Free agency is impending. It's right around the corner. And David Price recently talked about it. He's not necessarily committed. He has not penned that deal. And he's been the lone bright spot for the Tigers pitching this season. If the Tigers lose him, then there go any chances of a championship in the near future, in my opinion at least. So I think the Tigers also need to invest in youth and try to do something so that they can keep stars like David Price around for the long run. Because right now, this season's not looking great, but future seasons as well, looking even more iffy.
And have you seen Max Scherzer and how good he has been playing out in Washington? I mean, my goodness. I mean, looking at the numbers that he's had and, you know, the no-hitter, you know, earlier this year, Max Scherzer is a guy that, you know, looking back at what Detroit had, I mean, in just in those two pitchers alone, when you look at when Max was playing along with JV, and JV was a pretty solid player when Max was here, I mean, my goodness, Detroit had arguably the best starting pitching rotation in all of baseball. And, you know, Max, the Tigers couldn't compete with the amount of money that was thrown at Max Scherzer when he signed that deal with the Washington Nationals. I forget what the deal was, but just an enormous amount of money that the Detroit Tigers certainly had no room to pay Max. And, you know, looking at what he's doing now, I mean, you can't help but think, what if he would have stayed? You know what I mean? So right now, again, I'm right there with you. You gave him a D+. I'm giving him C minus, D+ in that range, because I just think that this is a team who, you know, for the past, you know, 3 years now has had an expectation of winning a World Series. They came very close back in 2012 when, of course, they played the New York Yankees and fell in that series. And it's like ever since then, it's like, okay, you've got the pieces, just about fine-tuning here and there, making some adjustments and going out there and winning. And they haven't made the necessary adjustments. The glaring things being what we've hammered on for a while now, that being especially the bullpen. Because, you know, and again, really, I think one of the glaring moments in this year that you'll look back on and say, okay, this sort of capitalizes the problems that the Detroit Tigers have had this year and for many years, for that matter, is when Justin Verlander, he goes out there, has a spectacular outing this past weekend. And then what happens in the fifth? Or the ninth, not even the fifth, the ninth inning, excuse me. The Tigers had a surmountable lead in the ninth inning. The bullpen comes in and they give up run after run after run, and the Tigers end up losing that game. That is a moment that you can look back at and say, you want to know what the problem is with the Detroit Tigers? Look at that game. Just look at the ninth inning and sit back and just look at what happened. That's what has constantly been a big problem for the Detroit Tigers, Isaac.
Well, when I look back on this season, what I think about is two moments, really. That's one of them. The other was a few weeks before, I'm not sure if you remember, James McCann's walk-off homer that everybody kind of pointed to is this the turning point? Is this the point where the Tigers managed to put everything together and go and get back in the division race, maybe win it? No, it wasn't. Because I was optimistic at this moment, and since then the Tigers killed my optimism, killed my buzz, because I'm not sure what else you can do. Like you said, the management, they've had the same problem for a while now. It's not like the bullpen was great last year. Mm-hmm. The bullpen's been a problem for some time down the stretch, and there was really very little done this offseason to fix it, so we shouldn't be too surprised that it's a problem now.
Right, I agree. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave a comment there. I'll read it live here on the air, or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Well, I'll tell you what, man, I life has been pumped back into Ann Arbor when it comes to what they've been doing. Well, haven't even done yet on the gridiron, Isaac, I should say. Because, you know, if you missed our current sports quick hit headliners, goodness gracious, according to Michigan, only scattered single seats remain for home games against Oregon State, Northwestern, and Rutgers. Now, those limited opportunities do not include rivalry games against Michigan State and Ohio State, which were both announced as sellouts last week. According to a Michigan spokesman, those remain the program's lone sellouts as of Monday. Now, if you look at it, the Wolverine September 12th matchup with Oregon State will represent Jim Harbaugh's first game, home game, as a U of M coach, while an October 10th date with Northwestern represents homecoming weekend in Ann Arbor, and a November 7th date with Rutgers is the Wolverines' first home game against Rutgers since it joined the Big Ten. So, you know, if you look at it, Michigan's remaining games are against UNLV on September 19th and Brigham Young on September 26th. And the prices are available. I'm looking at this article, which is written by Brendan Quinn of MLive Sports. And he just talks about how, you know, just how ticket sales are really kind of going through the roof now as the season quickly approaches. I can't believe that it's, you know, mid-July right now. And next month, I mean, hey, practice is going to start revving up, and you're going to start to see guys, you know, hit that practice field pretty tough. And then next thing you know, we're talking about the beginning of college football. Exciting stuff. And, you know, the hire of Jim Harbaugh, we've been talking about it for months now, since December, when the news broke about Jim Harbaugh becoming the head coach at U of M. And we kind of saw this coming because, you know, U of M football has been in a downtrodden state for about 2 years now. Brady Hoke, that whole era, you know, is one that, you know, is looked back on now as, man, what in the world was going on there? They haven't really competed against Michigan State for a while now as well. Now that Jim Harbaugh has been hired, he's sort of looked at as the savior of U of M football. And people want to just go to the games to feel that atmosphere and to see him just walk the sidelines in his khakis. He has that type of an aura. And it's really exciting, Isaac, for me. Of course, you and I, you know, you go to Michigan State. I graduated from Michigan State. I bleed green. But I always say that college football in the state of Michigan is healthier when the rivalry is competitive, alive, and well. I'm really, really hoping that this U of M and Michigan State game lives up to the billing. But again, you got to temper those expectations because even though Jim Harbaugh is being looked at as the savior, I really think it's unfair to look at him as a guy who's going to come in 1 year change this whole thing around.
Al, I mean, the game of college football in general, forget the state of Michigan, the game of college football is better when Michigan's good.
Right.
Now, Michigan's one of the most historic programs in all of college football, of course, only second behind Bama in championships. But the other thing is, I remember as a little kid, I'd wake up and watch college game day, get ready for the Ohio State-Michigan game every single year on at 2:30, probably the greatest rivalry in college football across the nation. So that's outstanding that will be back in full force soon, not next year, though. Like you said, next year, temper your expectations, people, because this just isn't that good of a team. At some level, you can only make lemonade if you have lemons. And Harbaugh is lacking in the lemons category. Or he's got lemons,
he's
but got, of a different yeah, he, sort.
He's got definitely
some lemons.
Got lemons, yeah, without a doubt. And they're pretty sour as well. But yeah,
exactly.
It'll be
tough for him to do.
Yeah, he's
really
not a miracle
well
worker.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. He's not a miracle worker, and that's what we have to understand. But it's very encouraging to see because I tell you what, one of the most glaring games, I forget who Michigan was playing last year, but it was a really rainy day. And, you know, I remember the game was broadcasted, and it was everywhere. I mean, I turned on local television. Everyone's talking about it. I opened the paper the next day. Everyone had, an article written about it in the Free Press and the Detroit News, the Lansing State Journal. And, you know, it just highlighted how during that Saturday, again, I forget who the game was against, but it was a really rainy Saturday. And you look at the game, and there, if you look at the stands, you know how you can see the stands on certain visual shots, there were really no one there. No one at all. And I'm sitting there looking like, I've never seen the Big House look like that. I mean, you know, scattered in certain areas, you saw people in bunches there, but it wasn't packed out. And I'm used to seeing on a Saturday the Big House packed to capacity. It's one of the most historic venues in all of sports. I remember as a sports reporter, in 2012 with Channel 6 News, when I went out there to cover the Michigan State and Michigan, you know, rivalry game. It was a game where Denard Robinson, of course, you know, they won the game on, you know, last minute field goal. He leads him down, and you know, the entire, you know, fan base rushes the field. It's an unbelievable moment. I'm used to seeing the Big House like that, just off the chain, off the rails. And to see how even the fan support for Michigan football dwindled last year, where they even had certain promotions going on to try and get people out to the stadium, it was just like, this feels weird. This feels weird. I'm not used to this. So it's very encouraging, you know, that, hey, people are going to come out and want to see this team regardless of how good they will be next season. At least they're going out and spending money. And that's what, at the end of the day, the upper echelons of Michigan athletics really care about.
And that's what we want to emphasize, though. You go to see Harbaugh. You go to see the start of the revival of the Michigan program, because this team, in my mind, is going to go 7-5 next year. That's my prediction.
Okay.
So I don't think this is going to be an outstanding team. I think they're going to lose to Michigan State, Ohio State, all of the really decent opponents, to be honest. But I think that Harbaugh is an outstanding coach. You talk about somebody who had unprecedented success at Stanford, really revived a historic program just like he's going to attempt to do at Michigan. Mm-hmm. And then the pros, he had the best record of any head coach 3 years in. So Harbaugh is a proven coach. Like we said, he's not a miracle worker, but you can see in the 2016 recruiting class, he's getting this program back on its feet.
Yeah, I think they will be back. It's just a matter of time, to be honest. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. When we come back after this first break, we'll be chatting with former Lansing Lugnuts pitcher now with the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes, Chase DeYoung. He'll be talking about his time in minor league baseball, in the grind of minor league baseball. And also, we'll get his thoughts on last night's home run derby. All of that and so much more. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. You are tuned into Current Sports on this Tuesday, July 14th. I am your host, Al Martin. And speaking of college football, folks, I'm pretty excited because tomorrow morning, actually, that's right, we I had to maneuver around this young man's schedule because his life is steadily becoming busier and busier as the days pass by now. Of course, in college football, really, as it ramps up next month. But we had to change around the schedule because him and the team will actually be heading out to head coach Mark D'Antonio's lake house for an outing, a team outing tomorrow. So he could not attend the usual Wednesday at 3 p.m. taping. So we had to move it up actually to 9 a.m. tomorrow. But I'll be chatting with Michigan State linebacker, senior linebacker at that, Darian Harris. You do not want to miss that. As he prepares us all for Spartan football. So if you want to attend that, if you want to, wipe the crust out your eyes early and come to the WKAR TV studios, all you got to do is simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. And then it's just a matter of showing up here at the Communication Arts and Sciences building on the campus of MSU. All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. He was selected by the Toronto Blue Jays in the second round of the 2012 first-year player draft out of Woodrow Wilson High School in Long Beach, California. He had committed to attend the University of Southern California before signing with the Toronto Blue Jays and has just recently been traded to the L.A. Dodgers. It's my pleasure to have on Chase DeYoung. How you doing, Chase?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here. Glad I could do this interview with you.
Yes, thanks a lot for joining me today, man. First off, I want to get your thoughts on last night's home run derby. Because for me, myself, as I stated at the top of the hour, I really loved it because it was a different format. You had the timed aspect to it, 4 minutes per player to knock out the park, as many home runs as they could to advance. And then, of course, Todd Frazier taking the entire enchilada with the W. What'd you think of last night's home run derby?
I'm right there with you. I like the new format. Keeps things moving. It shows the endurance portion of it. Guys really need to be in shape, and they got to last as long as they can and, kind of pace themselves. But last night's home run derby was amazing. Watching kind of the seasoned vet versus the new guy in town, new guy on campus. Jock Peterson was putting on a show, but, in the end, seeing the Todd father, win it at home in front of his home crowd, that just made it all that more special. It was a lot of fun to watch that derby.
And speaking of special, I always say, Chase, that, the home run derby is really the most entertaining pre-All-Star festivity in all of sports. What do you think makes, All-Star week in the MLB so special?
I mean, just kind of the alignment of all the stars being there, you know? I mean, just having all those all-star caliber players, I mean, just playing in that game together, seeing them all interact with each other. I think, what is it, Adam Jones for the Baltimore Orioles said it best yesterday. He goes, I mean, for 162, we're all villains and enemies with each other, but for one game, one weekend, the 3 days that they're there, they all get to be buddies and friends, and seeing them all interact with each other and just the way things are, how loose it is. Just, I mean, it makes it fun to watch it.
That is very cool stuff, and very, very well said, Chase. All right, I want to talk about your career now. You go ahead, let's take a, you know, a quick trip back to 2012. Of course, you were selected in the second round of the 2012 first year player draft out of Woodrow Wilson High School in Long Beach, California. You had committed to go to USC before signing with the Blue Jays. Why not go to USC, Chase?
You know what, man? My family and I, we just really prayed about it a lot, and you know, we came down to, you know, college is always going to be there. And, you know, not a lot of, I mean, a lot of kids at 18 years old, after you graduate high school, you go to college, but only a select few have the opportunity to go and, you know, become a professional athlete. And I just thought, you know, that's what I've been dreaming of doing. And I really like the thought of, you know, taking my career into my own hands and starting out, becoming a professional, you know, just going to work. And, that was just really intriguing to me. I was, and, you know, I think I made the right decision.
And, you know, you see so many athletes from that high school level, you know, that are drafted in that first-year player draft to the MLB. You know, you see a lot of them go to college first, maybe play, you know, a few years there, and then make that leap. Why did you feel you were so ready at that time, you know, to go straight out of high school to the pros?
You know, I just felt like I knew who I was well enough, and that I just really wanted to get developed. And you know, I just love the idea that minor league baseball, and you know, being a part of, you know, professional organization like the Toronto Blue Jays or the Los Angeles Dodgers or any of the 30 teams, the main value of every coordinator, coach, front office guy, general manager is development. And you know, I love the idea that, you know, no matter where I was, no matter where I was pitching, the only thing that was on their mind was to get us better. And if the whole team gets better, and you know, we're all getting developed together, then that's how you have a successful team in the minor league. You know, it's not about, you know, winning, you know, 90 games a year in a 140 game season. I mean, it is, and that's what happens. Like, you gotta compete, and you want to win every time. But mm-hmm. You know, if you go out there and you're in the five-man rotation, that first time you go out there and say you throw the ball great, you know, you go complete game, you strike out everybody, whatever you want to call it, you know, then in 5 days you got to do it again. And say that next one you don't do very well, and you know, oh man, you get run out of there in the third inning and things like that. Well, in 5 days you got to do it again. So, I mean, it's game after game, and I love it, man. It's the grind. It's just playing every day, or every fifth day in my case. It's just something I love that I signed up for, and you got to answer the bell every fifth day, and I love that.
I love your mentality when it comes to that. What was your toughest adjustment when you made that leap from high school baseball to the pros?
Same thing, playing every fifth day. I mean, you gotta make essentially 30 starts in a year if you got a 140 game season and you're in that five-man rotation, and you need to be able to give your team innings. So just being able to learn my routine in between to stay healthy and stay in top competitive shape for those that many months, that many games, I needed to learn to have a good routine, which it was like conditioning, working out, you know, throwing program, just when I should throw my bullpens, things like that, just getting ready to answer the bell on that fifth day.
You know, Chase, for a moment here, I want to talk about the schedule of a minor league baseball player, because, you know, I've seen stories. One story that really stands out to me is a sort of a profile that was done by HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. And they actually followed a few minor league baseball players throughout the course of a year. And it was just amazing to me. You know, you mentioned that grind, being on the road all the time, I don't know how the pay is, you know, where you play at, but they highlighted a few players that weren't getting paid a lot, and, you know, a few of them actually sleeping on air mattresses. But being on the road and loving the game and getting to know your teammates, you know, the camaraderie that was built, that's a constant grind, a yearly grind. For you, what is the schedule of a minor league player like?
I mean, it's exactly what you just said, man. It's a grind. It's we play 140 games in 150 days, and you got to be at the ballpark at 1 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game because you got to get your running in, your lifting in, and everything like that. And you know what it is, man. It's doubleheaders on one day, and then you got a 9-hour bus ride through the night to go play another game the next day. And you know it is. It's a grind. It's taxing. It's all of the above. But the one thing that everybody kind of skips over is, man, it's the coolest job in the world. I mean, it's tough, but I mean, if it was easy, everybody would do it. Not everybody can, you know, ride a 10-hour bus ride through the night, wake up the next day on 4 hours of sleep, and then go compete and compete at a professional level. And, you know, it's an elite group of guys that we all love doing it. And, you know, that's one thing I commend baseball for, not trash talking other sports, but, mm-hmm. you know, minor league baseball weeds out the guys that have the talent but don't have the heart. Because if you don't have the heart for this game and you try to play 140 games in 150 days and not see your family for 7 months, I mean, it weeds you out where, you know, basketball, baseball, like, everybody's like, oh, man, you were a second-round draft pick. Like, did you go to Toronto? I was like, no, like, I started in rookie ball. That's how it works. Where, like, if you're the first-round pick in an NBA or an NFL team, like, essentially that person's going to be in your starting lineup, like, the next year. That's going to be an impact player. But mm-hmm. where baseball, you get drafted and you got to earn your way all the way up to the big leagues. And, I mean, not saying that those guys didn't earn their spot on that team. They did. I'm just saying baseball is a little bit different in the fact that you got to go through that grind before you get up there and start making all that money and make those millions and, you know, living that glamorous lifestyle, that jet lifestyle. But, you know, everybody complains about, oh, man, minor league baseball players, we don't get paid that much money, and we don't. And, you know, we got to ride on the bus rides, and we do. But, you know what? To show up in little towns, quote-unquote little towns, all over the country mm-hmm. and get to go play in front of, like, good crowds. Like, in Lansing, we had great crowds and great supporters because of MSU and things like that. Everybody there loves their sports. But, you know, if you want to see baseball at its purest form, go out there and watch the Lugnuts play. Go out and watch, you know, the Great Lake Loons play ball. You know, go see that, because those guys are going to be at Comerica Park pitching against Justin Verlander one day or something like that. But you get to see them when they were 20, 21 years old, you know, and there was only a few people in the stands. But you get to see, you get to get up close and personal with that, where, I mean, minor league baseball is awesome.
It is. It certainly is, Chase. And, you know, I think you just had a tremendous quote there, how you talked about how minor league baseball weeds out the guys that have the talent but don't have the heart. Can you give me an example of players that you've seen over the years during your time in the minors that have had that talent but can't deal with being away from the family and that constant grind? Can you give me an example of that?
I mean, you can't really just, like, call people out like that.
Right,
you
no
know,
names.
This and this, but
right,
but
right.
What I can tell you is that, I mean, I've had the privilege of working with, like, different big leaguers and different, you know, high-caliber players, things like that, guys that have had, you know, illustrious careers in the major leagues, and you can go up to every single one of them and ask them, were there guys better than you that you played with coming up that didn't make it? And every single one of them will tell you yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right, right. And that's the grind. Again, those guys, you know, guys who survived that minor league system and end up going to the big leagues, they have that testimony. Looking at, you know, that grind, did you or do you ever get discouraged?
I mean, there's times where you got peaks and valleys, but I mean, at the end of the day, like, yeah, you can complain about, man, like, I haven't seen my family in 4 months, or, you know, I haven't done this or haven't done that, but you know what, you got to step back and realize, man, just thank God that, you know, I get to play a game for a living. I get to make a living playing the game that I love, playing baseball, going to towns like Dayton, Ohio, or, you know, Fort Wayne, Indiana, and just playing in these awesome stadiums in front of awesome crowds, things like that. I mean, it's not your normal 9-to-5, and I'm always going to be grateful for that because I'm going to have this awesome story and testimony of all these places that I got to play in front of awesome fans, things like that. And that's what just makes it, you know. I'm on this incredible journey right now, and you just got to, I mean, it's hard, don't get me wrong, but you just have to enjoy the process and just enjoy the grind.
Yeah, yeah. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKRS Current Sports, we're chatting with Chase DeYoung, formerly of the Lansing Lugnuts, now with the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes. How about that? Now, when you are here in Lansing, Chase, with the Lansing Lugnuts, of course, affiliate of the Toronto Blue Jays, what was it like playing here in Lansing? You briefly touched on the amazing crowd at Cooley Law School Stadium and the atmosphere downtown Lansing. What was it like playing for the Lugnuts and the connections you built here?
I loved it, man. Lansing is by far right now my favorite city I've ever had the opportunity to play in. Just atmosphere, you know, team-wise. That team that's there right now that we had in the first half, mm-hmm. I mean, without a doubt in my mind, I can say it's the best team I've ever been a part of just because of camaraderie, you know, just the way we won, the way we went about our business and clubhouse atmosphere. I mean, it was an incredible blessing to be a part of that team. You know, I know my favorite story in Lansing actually happened in 2014. It was the 4th of July game, actually against the Great Lake Loons. And it's funny because now when I'm on the Quakes, those guys were on the opposing side of this game that I'm about to talk about. Was we went 14 innings on the 4th of July, and we were supposed to have a firework show. So they cleared out the outfield for everybody to come into the stands. In like the seventh inning because they had to get ready for fireworks. Well, we ended up going 14 innings. Well, we had, 13,000 plus at that game. So it was standing room only. Everybody's in the crowd and nobody left because it was a tie game or because they had fireworks afterwards. But the city, because Lansing is the state capital, the city put on their own fireworks show. And for the last three innings of the game, we were playing underneath fireworks. And it just gave you that surreal sandlot type feeling when you're out there on the field playing. I mean, it was incredible. And I mean, the icing on top of the cake was the Lugnuts walked off in 14, and then we Gatorade shower, then everybody just sat down on the field and we started watching the fireworks. I mean, it's a moment that I'm going to remember in my baseball career for the rest of my life, no matter how far I go.
Oh boy, what a story, Chase! So you guys were actually with the Capitol putting on their own fireworks show at the same time you guys were playing. You guys were playing through big bangs of fireworks.
yeah, it was crazy, man. It was unbelievable. And then after that fireworks show was over, then we walked off, and then we had our own fireworks show. So that 13,000 there, they were all pretty happy. They got a good show that night.
Oh, boy. Again, as you stated, I'm pretty sure that's a memory you will always have. You'll tell your grandchildren about that one. All right, Chase, before we get you out of here, my man, being traded to the L.A. Dodgers, how did that come about, and what was your reaction to that news?
Man, I'm still speechless about it. I'm still wrapping my head around it. I've been here for 11 days in Rancho Cucamonga, and, I mean, it's crazy. For the last, 3.5 years, grinding with those guys that I've known, those brothers that I've had, that I've spent more time with them than my family in the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, the decisions were made, and then I was on a plane, and it was just, all right, you're now a Dodger. Which, at the beginning of it, I took the time to mourn the fact that, all right, hey, I'm not a Blue Jay anymore. Like, this has been home the last 4 years. But then the pendulum shifted, and I got to think, man, like, I get to be a Dodger. Like, I grew up near L.A. I grew up going to Dodger games, watching, like, Nomar Garciaparra play, Eric Gagne closing out games, things like that. I mean, mm-hmm. Now I get to be a part of that history of the Blue. I get to be a Dodger. So that was incredible. It was an amazing experience. Being traded is a whirlwind of a day because I woke up at 11 o'clock to phone calls that I missed, and I had to call our front office, and they were like, hey, I just wanted to thank you very much for everything you've done for us in the last 3 years. It's really hard to see you go, but you've been traded to the Dodgers. And then it's just like, what?
Whoa. Man.
And then all of a sudden, like, I got called at 11 o'clock on, I want to say it was July the 20th. Mm-hmm. No, sorry. June the 20th?
Yeah.
And then June the 21st, I was in LA. I got traded. I was on a plane, and I mean, there I went.
And you know what? Going through something like that, Jace, was it also sort of a wake up call that, hey, this is also a business at the end of the day, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that was the one time that you really did get to see the business aspect of baseball, and you can't forget that. And I think sometimes as players, you know, you show up to the field every day, and there's a monotony of it that, you know, it gets tough and this, and you think, oh man, nobody's watching. But there's that old cliche that even though you're on, you know, this team, you're playing for 29 other ones, because somebody's in the stands watching you, and somebody might like you, and if they like you enough, then they're going to go out and get you. And you know, I feel blessed that the Dodgers, you know, felt comfortable enough with me that they actually went out and traded for me. I mean, the Blue Jays took me in the second round, and you know, that was an awesome experience. And you know, clearly they had, you know, stuff invested in me that they liked me and they took me as high as they did. Mm-hmm. But then here come the Dodgers saying, hey, we like him so much that we want to trade for him and we want him. So that it's very reassuring that something like that could happen.
There you have it. Chase DeYoung, formerly of the Lansing Lugnuts, now with the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes. Chase, thanks so much for joining me today. Lansing will certainly miss you, brother.
Hey, I miss you guys too. Take care.
All right, Chase. Thanks a lot, man. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's edition of Current Sports by chatting about the Detroit Pistons acquiring Steve Blake. Also, Tiger Woods scoffing at retirement. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Only 7 minutes left here in the show. If you want to call in, get a quick call in or a quick thought or comment, call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We actually just wrapped up a chat before our second break here on the show with Chase DeYoung, former pitcher for the Lansing Lugnuts, now with the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes out in sunny California. Man, Isaac, was that great or what? I mean, Chase DeYoung talking about his love for the game of baseball and just the grind of the minor league system and, you know, how he really embraced it. He's a guy who, because you see a lot of kids in high school who play baseball, who get drafted by a major league program right out of high school to the minor somewhere. And a lot of them decide to say, okay, that's nice, but I want to hone my skills a bit more and take my talents to a college and then try this whole thing again. But Chase is one of those players who said, no, I'm going to do it right out of high school. Let's do it. Let's embrace the grind right now. But wow, was that interesting or what?
Oh, I loved it. That's better than any Showtime special I've seen, at least. Because Chase, the thing about it, you talk about playing for the love of the game and just how passionate he was about the sport. He was so genuine as well, telling you about the ups and downs. Fantastic interview, and we certainly hope he has all the best with the Dodgers.
Yeah, without a doubt, because, you know, I remember covering him when he was here in the area for pitching for the Lansing Lugnuts, and, you know, obviously you can hear, you know, through your speakers, he is a very well-spoken guy, very intelligent, and one heck of a player. And, I hope one day we do see Chase DeYoung, you know, in the big leagues, pitching for, you know, as a starter at some major league program, because he is certainly very, very talented. But thanks a lot to Chase again for joining us. That was fantastic stuff. All right, really, really quickly here, Isaac, to close out our show, you know, I found it, you know, pretty comical how, even though, you and I have said this on the airwaves, that we think Tiger Woods is done. We'll never see Tiger Woods you know, go back to the days of you know, back in, you know, the early 2000s where he was clearly the best golfer on the planet. I mean, blowing out the field by like 15 strokes in majors on a regular basis. And Tiger Woods, I don't think we'll ever see another phenomenon in the game of golf like him. And you know, so much so, his you know, he hasn't won, you know, a tournament since 2013. He hasn't won a major since 2008. And you have a lot of people out there that think that Tiger Woods just needs to hang it up and retire. Tiger Woods scoffed at that this morning. He actually had this to say: "Retirement? I don't have any AARP card yet, so I'm a ways from that." Again, he said this at the Old Course, which is home to the 144th British Open that begins on Thursday. He goes on to say, "I'm still young. I'm not 40 yet. I know some of you guys think I'm buried and done, but I'm still right here in front of you." A very savvy response. And also, I think it is a wake-up call to realize that I think the reason why people think Tiger Woods is buried and done, because anytime you go from being that dominant in your respective sport to being a shade of that, just what, a few years later, so 2008, so we're talking about 7 years, 6 years from now, it's jarring. And the average fan in the media want to, you know, just say, let's forget about him, let's move on, because we've been beating this dead horse for a while now. We need to just move on from it. But Tiger Woods, you know, with his comments, is sort of saying, hey, don't forget about me just yet, because I still do have a lot of golf to play.
Al, you can't forget about Tiger, because that's the thing. Like you said, the media and fans in general, you've got to pay attention whenever Tiger's on a golf course, just because his persona is so much bigger than life. He's the most popular golf figure of all times, who, of course, lost all that popularity. So he gets paid a lot of attention to, and like you said, he hasn't won in a while. With that being said, though, he's not even 40 yet, so not saying he can have a huge revival and compete with Rory or Spieth, but he might have another tournament win in him. We'll see.
I'm hoping it's a major. I'm hoping one of those tournament wins becomes a major, because, my goodness, I've been waiting, you know, since I graduated high school to see that, right? The Pistons acquiring Steve Blake. Of course, the Brandon Jennings still recuperating from a ruptured left Achilles and an uneven summer league performance from Spencer Dinwiddie. The Pistons went searching for some insurance behind point guard Reggie Jackson. They hope to find it in veteran Steve Blake. The Pistons acquired Blake from the Brooklyn Nets for forward Quincy Miller. The team announced that on Monday evening. A good addition for the Pistons, Isaac.
Al, I like Blake, and I think he definitely fits into that Stan Van Gundy mindset. You know, hard-nosed defense, shooting threes, things like that. But also trading Quincy Miller, that's a player who I still think had some potential and had a lot to prove and could have proved it.
Yeah, I agree. I like Steve Blake. He's a guy who can just come. They just need something solid. And bringing in him, I mean, he's a guy who's not going to turn the ball over a lot.
Proven.
Maybe, you know, get you, you know, eight points here and there. But just to get everybody involved, I think Stan Van Gundy made the right move here. All right, folks. Well, we unfortunately are out of time. I want to give a special thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. A special thanks to Jesse Goldberg Strassler and Chase DeYoung. Chase being my guest on today's show, and Jesse setting up things to make that happen. Thanks a lot, Jesse. Also, same time, same place tomorrow. Take care. Have a fantastic Tuesday. And be easy, people.